Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business, take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
The Athletic.
Hello and welcome to the TIFO Football Podcast. I am Joe Devine. And today I'm delighted to be enjoined. That's quite nice, isn't it? To be enjoined.
I think that means we're now married.
I hope so. Because I would love to spend the rest of my life with John McKenzie. No. Yeah,
the,
how you doing,
the feeling,
buddy?
Feeling is mutual.
You okay?
Yeah, good, thanks.
Good stuff. Also joined today by JJ Bull the Bullard.
I quite want to do that voice that I was doing earlier.
Which one?
I'm a guy.
He's forcing it into the show, Steve. He won't allow you to cut it. Now, say one thing.
Lost confidence in
it. I put him on the spot and he lost his confidence.
I can talk about a lot of things.
There
advice.
You go.
I'm not doing it very much.
What's happening on the podcast today? Well, so many things happened today. Aston Villa and Newcastle happened today. Oh, it didn't, but it happened a few days ago. But it happened today in our chat. And for you, whenever you're listening, even in the future, it's happening today. We also discussed the surprising value of maple syrup to the Canadian economy. Thanks, John, for bringing us to that. Have Arsenal completely fucked it after the weekend? Yes or no? I'm not sure that we reached a conclusion because I think we started talking about other things. Namely, I tried to do a dressing room speech, didn't I? Because I thought I'd be a good one in there at halftime. So I gave that a go, and I think it was pretty good.
I think it's a well-structured improvised section.
Well, Welsh-structured.
Yeah.
I did spend a lot of time in Wales as a child, so it wouldn't be a surprise to me or you.
Well, did I say Welsh?
If I structured my things in a Welsh way.
I meant well.
Well-structured. Well, things got hazy around that end, but things cleared up again when we discussed Brighton. And Chelsea, good God, what a strange affair that was over the weekend. We talk broad, we take five steps back and look at the big picture, macro. What else happened? Does looking into a light make you sneeze? We talk about that. And also, we roam through the quarterfinals of the Champions League, betwixt and between the first and second legs. That was an exciting bit. You've got to hold on to get to that bit today. I do tell you, it's not easy to get to that bit. But
the retention rate should be rather low.
That's right. The retention rate probably will be very low for this episode. But do you know what the retention rate is exceedingly high for?
The Athletic.
It's The Athletic. Visit theathletic.com/TIFO. Theathletic.com/TIFO. Where if you wish to retain yourself for long, head there. Because everything you read for long. You know what I'm saying?
But don't retain.
You don't retain.
Well, you have to read the same page over and over again.
I actually don't retain information either. It's one of the downsides of being me. Anyway, that's theathletic.com/TIFO. Well, all that's left for me to do now is leave you in the warm hands and the cool embrace of...
me trying to work out where to go on holiday.
Yes, that. Yeah.
On my own.
Else to begin, of course, on such a big week than Aston Villa 3-0 Newcastle, big game of the weekend, or was anticipated to be, John and JJ. It had the Saturday prime time slot. Is that the prime time slot? The early slot? Is that the prime time slot? Or is it the later
that's
slot?
That's just the early slot.
It's the early slot. Which one's the prime time slot?
I would say 5:30.
On the Saturday?
Yeah.
I wonder if it's Sunday.
I think it's Sunday,
Do you think it's Sunday?
4 p.m. on Sunday.
4 p.m. on Sunday?
Yeah.
Maybe it is that, isn't it?
Although Super Sunday is not what it was.
I like a 2 p.m. That's good on Sunday, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, anyway, then it was in the slot the furthest from the Super slot. But it was a terrific game of football. Maybe the result could have been anticipated a little bit, John. You believe that Newcastle are kind of the perfect team for this current Aston Villa side to face, don't you?
Yes, I think that there's certain things about Newcastle that are quite predictable, and part of the reason why we've seen Newcastle drop off a little bit after the winter break. We had a winter break after the World Cup?
The World Cup, I suppose.
We had a winter break.
Yeah. It was the World Cup.
Yeah, I think we've seen a number of teams now recognise ways to cause them problems. So obviously Newcastle get a huge amount of upside from their high press. Teams that can bypass that are gonna do quite well. But also their build-up, I think, has been struggling recently. So JJ and I actually went to the Brentford game, Brentford-Newcastle. Was it last week?
Two weeks ago.
And in that game, Brentford absolutely dominated the first half. Newcastle came out playing the usual structure that they play, a 4-3-3 build-up structure. And Brentford just had their number. They knew exactly how to stop them from moving the ball down the field. In the second half, Newcastle actually changed up. So they basically went sort of 4-4-2, 4-2-3-1-ish. They pushed Guimaraes up and they brought on Callum Wilson alongside Alexander Isak. And as a result of that change, Brentford really struggled to stop them from building up. And so that changed the game completely. So I think we're already seeing teams recognising the way that Newcastle are building up and causing them problems in that way. Brentford couldn't respond when they changed at half-time. They actually, in this game, the Newcastle-Villa game, Eddie Howe changed things up at half-time as well. But Villa clearly had a prep for that as well. But Villa do a number of things quite well.
Look how easily interrupted he is. We think he's been here for a year. We think he's getting really, really good, don't we? But there's still some things like this where you just move a cable and John stops like a dog who's seen a squirrel.
I mean, we've done videos where I've worn every single shirt in the building.
That's right.
Take them one at a time and we got away with that.
No. So Villa under Emery, obviously really, really great build-up structures. They also really good at sort of, similar to Roberto De Zerbi, baiting in the opposition to generate space that they can then transition through artificially.
You're talking about Villa now.
Yes.
Let me set the scene for you while you do that, because Villa, I believe when they won this game, might have changed since because there have been games that have happened since then, but when they won this game, they had taken more points than every team since Emery started in the Premier League than, except Arsenal, right? So theoretically, if there was a Premier League table that started the day that Emery joined
October the 24th,
pre-World Cup, they would have been second in that table, which is quite remarkable, really. I mean, where are they currently in the league? Are they seventh, Steve Hankey?
They are sixth.
They're sixth right now. So they're theoretically fighting for a Europa League place. It's sort of snuck up on many people, but it's happening. And this victory against Newcastle kind of threw it in your face a little bit, didn't it?
Threw what in my face?
Not your face, just one the collective face.
Villa have obviously been on a really good run of form.
Sorry, this is the whole face thing is confusing for you. I know it is, but you carry on.
Yeah, the Villa have been in a really good run of form under Unai Emery. We made a video on Friday looking at how much they've been overperforming their numbers to suggest that they probably aren't the second best team in the league, despite the fact that the table per point says that.
Yes,
under Emery at least. So I had a look a little bit at that, dug through some of the numbers. Upset a lot of Villa fans, but also explained why there might be explanations for why they are overperforming their underlying numbers. So focused particularly on Ollie Watkins, the Unai Emery approach, which I talked about, deep build-up, generating space to transition into, getting Ollie Watkins into those really dangerous areas, particularly, you know, getting in behind back lines in between the two centre-backs. Yeah. Really, really productive way of getting him to front of goal.
Well, he said before the game, he was interviewed by the Sky commentary team, or BT, was it BT? I don't know, whichever one.
It was BT Sport.
BT Sport. He was interviewed by British Telecom, before the game via satellite. And, you know, they asked him, what's different for you, Ollie Watkins, under Emery? Because, I mean, he's absolutely outstanding. Like, his performance in this game was incredible. He's electric to watch, right? And he said very simply, I used to chase into the corner flag to put a shift in for the team, and now I stay in the width of the box. Yeah. And, like, that's the difference, right? Pretty cool.
Hmm. Yeah. So under
Emery, what do you think? Was that? Can I get more of a reaction from you?
I think it's very cool.
Thank you. Yeah, I think it is cool as well. Cool.
And we talked about that in the video. We showed how their in possession structure is designed to get Watkins into those sorts of moments. And yeah, that, under Emery, Villa are brilliant. Villa fans may not recognise this, but I'm a massive fan of Unai Emery. I have been watched his teams for a number of years. I am sure that he will get them challenging for Europe in the next few seasons. And if they get into Europe, he will do very well with them because he does very well in Europe. My video is simply pointing out that at the current rate that they're on, it is it's probably unsustainable. So
we had this chat over the weekend, but what happens, listeners? Worth bringing people inside the inner circle here now.
Yeah,
right?
I like this.
John spots something interesting about a football team, makes a video about it that the vast majority of people enjoy and find informative, but usually the fans of that team, if it's not wholly positive and saying that your team is the best team of all time, better even than Guardiola's Barcelona team, then it's wrong, yeah? And then many people will send John vicious, horrific messages and emails over the following days. What a strange world we live in. Yeah, I know. I agree with that comment I just made. Isn't it weird? Yes, it is, Joe. Now, listen, as already illustrated by John, the only way that you think Villa aren't overperforming is if you believe Villa are the second best team in the Premier League. If you do not believe that, they are overperforming, and that is the end of the fucking conversation, okay? To say they're overperforming doesn't mean, oh, they should be in League One because we hate them and they're bad. That's not what anyone said here. Nobody said that. Just calm down. For fuck's sake.
You're not your football club. Like, it's not an attack on you.
No.
It's a team you support.
It's not even an attack.
And you're a customer as well.
That's right.
Think about that.
Yeah, customer. Go and spend your money, customer.
The 12th man, you paid to be it.
Please keep watching the videos, though. But anyway, no, it's towards the end of the season, isn't it? You get ground down after a while of people just, you know, repeatedly, you know, calling you a... It's not nice for anyone.
Especially in the office.
Yeah, it does happen a lot in the office.
Yeah.
But despite Villa fans' best efforts, I still have a soft spot for Villa. I love Unai Emery. I love the way they're playing. I thought they were excellent against Newcastle.
They were good, weren't they, JJ?
Really good to watch.
Yeah, I mean, the problem I had with this game is that we were mostly texting during it in our little group, so I don't feel like I've watched as much as I needed to.
I know what you mean.
To be able to assess that, which is a problem. But it was a nice chat. Yeah, Villa, like John says, are good. I don't think they're second best team in the league. I know.
Are you willing to put that view out?
I'm willing to say that. I thought Newcastle were brilliant against Brentford in that game that we went and saw, and I thought the change at how we made it halftime worked really well. And then the real difference you got, and they sort of missed it by having Isak up front from the start rather than Wilson, is that Wilson is probably just more of a hardy player and gets himself put about. It sounds really basic, but it kind of works when a lot of what Newcastle do is based on intensity and aggressiveness. And then you have Isak, who's not that. He's an amazing player, Isak. I love watching him. But he's not the kind of player who's going to cause loads of physical issues towards Mings and Conte at the back by just like getting about him, trying to body them.
No.
Whereas when you have Wilson there, and the second half they put them both on, right? So they had.
They did, and actually, to be fair, Newcastle's one of their best opportunities came very soon after Callum Wilson had joined the game.
Yeah. He's a really good player. I think Isak is the more technically skillful player. Like, he does amazing things with the ball. Every first touch he takes the ball away from someone. I know that's what you're meant to do, really. But he just does things. I don't know when you would know when to tackle him, because he just starts doing little flicks and stuff and then goes with it. It's always for a purpose, though. It's never like, you know, some people just do tricks and stuff for no real reason, like Antony spins around, doesn't do anything, no point. But like Isak will do all nice stuff that works. What was I talking about? Aston Villa being good.
Yeah, and then you started to talk in depth about Newcastle.
Yeah. Well, that was more interesting to me, I think, that bit, because I feel like John's covered Aston Villa really well.
Yeah. Let's stay on Villa just for one moment. You know, we already said Ollie Watkins gets a lot of the plaudits for the game, but Jacob Ramsey was really, really good as well. He's kind of growing into an interesting player, isn't he, John?
Yeah, and it's one of these players who comes through a youth system and then becomes Premier League worthy, I think. That's always really exciting, especially for a fan base to see that your youth system is working. But yeah, excellent. And there's so much flexibility in that team as well. So Jacob Ramsey's played on either side. He's played, I don't think he's played in the middle, but you get Buendia, who can play as a second striker, or you can play in one of the wide areas. We've had John McGinn playing out wide, also playing in one of the double pivot spots as well. You can have Leon Bailey up front, and if he plays, he drifts out to the wide areas, whereas if Buendia's up front, he drops inside, and the wide player on that side pushes forward. So loads of flexibility in terms of their in-possession stuff, but also everything is so rigid and structured. Everyone knows what they're doing, and I think that makes it really enjoyable to watch. This is the impression I get from Villa fans, as they're watching the game and they can see that their coach has a plan. It takes me back to when Leeds had Marcelo Bielsa. You're watching these games, and even when you don't win games, you can see that there is an idea there.
There's consideration.
Yeah, exactly. I think that gives a lot of credit to managers in the bank when they have that sort of approach.
Let me ask you this. We mentioned this already with Newcastle just before, the idea that potentially second half of the season, post-World Cup, they might have been found out a little bit what Eddie Howe's doing with the team, and opposition teams now have enough information to know how to best counter them. Presumably that will happen to Villa as well.
Yeah, especially because Unai Emery is a very structured coach. So a lot of, I mean, we can talk, you can watch a Villa game and you know exactly what's going to happen within reason. Like there's different routes that they can take out in the build-up, but the structure of the build-up will look the same.
So when should we expect that to sort of take effect with opposition teams? I mean, presumably, like, teams are going to start paying attention to Villa now if they hadn't already.
Yeah. I think that it will happen over the summer. Yeah. Premier League analysts will have a lot of time to go through the way that teams have been playing. And the other thing that happens, is the same thing that's happened with Newcastle, is that when Eddie Howe arrived at Newcastle, they were in a relegation battle. And so when opposition teams face them, they're like, this team is a lower table team. We just need to go out and be proactive. We need to be the protagonists and play our game. Mm-hmm. This season, obviously, they've ended up being in the Champions League conversation. And as a result, teams now are like, well, this Newcastle team are a very good side, so we will play them as though they are a very good side, and they'll change their tactical approach. Mm-hmm. And I think that will happen with Villa as well.
Yeah.
At the moment, they're probably coming up against a lot of teams who are like, we should go out and play our regular style against them.
Yeah.
What will start happening is that teams will see that they're really good in transition. They'll sit deeper. They'll make it harder for Villa to be able to break down their block. And when that happens, the big question is, how do you solve those problems as they rise?
It makes me think of Wayne Rooney. Do you remember when Wayne Rooney was a young player, 16, 17, coming through Everton and then Manchester United, before every team put two defenders on him, and he was incredible. And then every team started to double up defending him, and he just became a very, very good.
He just became Rain Rooney.
He just became Rain Rooney, yeah. Mm. It's sort of the same kind of thing, isn't it, JJ?
Yes, exactly the same thing.
Yes.
One of the things John's saying there, I think, is interesting, because it's almost like this is the perfect game to show the difference between what Howe's got, because people know how Newcastle play and people are figuring out what Emery's doing with it. And like the way Newcastle want to play, they couldn't do it in that game. Being constantly showed out wide, Villa always had a four or like a five in the midfield, like clustered together. So they have to go wide, which is not what they really want to do. And then they would be shut down when they went wide as well. So they couldn't really progress the ball. They couldn't knock it long. They were losing those balls. You had Isak versus two massive lads at the back. Mm. So that's another thing you can't really do, which is why maybe Wilson would be the better choice there. But that's what I mean. Like, it's quite a good example of how those two things match.
Well, would you start Isak and Callum Wilson together? Because neither of them have started a game together for Newcastle yet, but we have examples of them playing together in the second half of games, although maybe it's a bit of a game state issue.
Well, I don't really like a 4-4-2.
No.
But you don't have to be that. You can play Isak, as he did against Brentford, as the player behind the number nine. So you can do that, and then you join in the last lines, because formations don't really matter. It's just having players on the pitch in different times, in different positions. So you could do that, yeah. I mean, you can always play two. I mean, yeah, you could do that if you want. I don't know.
Let's talk about Anthony Gordon now, the Newcastle United player that came from Everton that cost £40 million. Rated? Whelmed? Underrated? Overrated? What do you guys think?
I thought that he wasn't a particularly fantastic player. Mm. I've been watching him on TV, but in real life, I can see it. And you see it in things that are kind of intangible, like you can see his aggressiveness, like
things
quality
that,
of touch.
In intangible, like you would see him in a tree, or you would see him like a...
Well, you can't measure... Well, I mean, maybe it's the wrong word. you can't measure his...
Oh, okay.
There's no like data for aggression.
When I look at the clouds, I see... Oh, is it a cumulonimbus? No, it's Anthony Gordon.
Exactly, yeah, because right. He lives in the clouds yeah. as well.
The two options for clouds, right?
Yeah.
Cumulonimbus
Nimbus
or
Gordon, yeah.
And 40 million... A lot of spendoolies, yeah. A lot of fedos.
What's his deal, though? What's he doing? Am I going to be impressed by him in the future?
I mean, the market's like obviously ramped prices up, and I think if you look at some of the, especially in this last window that we've gone through, there's players who clubs have spent a lot of money for who previously, I think, when you spend that amount of money, you expect the player to come in immediately and have an impact. So I think, yeah, there's definitely overpay there. But
that's normal for an English player, though. He's young, yeah. Like 22, so you play the English tax for a start. So you have a homegrown player. That's really important when you get in Champions League stuff as well.
Yeah.
Room to definitely improve as a player if you get coached right, and he's got that. He's got the right intensity and aggression you want of a player to play in that Eddie Howe style, so it's a great tactical fit for what they want to do. And yeah, that's kind of it. Like,
did you watch the clip of him not enjoying being substituted?
I was there when it happened. It's because he got subbed on. He got subbed on, and then got subbed off towards the end, and it's embarrassing. I've been subbed on and subbed off plenty of times.
Right.
It's always humiliating.
Right. Yeah.
Even at Sunday League,
even when you're the coach,
when you're losing 7-0,
you're subbing yourself on and off.
No, I wasn't the coach. No,
you weren't the coach.
I was just being subbed on and off. I mean, it was when I was 14, 15, playing in Viruri for Colony Colts.
You get subbed on and off as a child.
Yeah, well, I was rubbish when I was that young.
Yeah, but presumably when you're a child, you just let them carry on anyway. I mean, who cares?
I mean, I'm just not...
I mean, like, Inverurie, it's an important game there.
I was always in space.
The Aberdeenshire
part
derby.
Of the problem, because you want to be getting the ball, but I was in space away from where the people were.
Right.
So on one hand, I'm doing things very well because I'm keeping the structure in place for a switched ball. The other problem is that when the ball did indeed be switched towards me, it would go out for a throw-in.
Right. Right, I see what you're saying.
So the better thing to do is take JJ off and get someone
else
on.
That's quite sad, isn't it?
Well, I've got plenty of stories like that from my childhood, Joe.
Okay, tell us another one.
Once I was signed by Newcastle for £40 million, and no one believed in me, but I did. And I eventually grew to become Anthony Gordon.
You grew into...
I became Anthony Gordon.
Anthony Gordon.
And a cloud.
Yeah. Steve's typing in the doc. Unless they have anything else to say on this, I'd happily move on.
I cut this whole bit out.
I would like to say that I think Anthony Gordon is maybe underrated because he does have like high upside in terms of out of possession stuff, and people often undervalue that stuff.
He's good off the ball.
He's good off the ball.
That's what you're saying.
Yeah. And in a system like, as JJ's mentioned, Eddie Howe's Newcastle, that's a valuable asset to have. In fact, maybe the most important asset for a forward to have.
Could it be?
Well, I mean... Obviously, you want your forwards to be creative and score goals as well, right?
But that's what I want.
You have to be able to do the out-of-possession stuff as well, which is why I think the price ramped up. Not to mention the fact that Newcastle as well, people will expect them to have a lot more money. So I think that will drive the price.
That's why like Murphy plays as well, when Almiron's been injured. But it's not going to get you lots of goals and assists or whatever, or create huge amounts of chances, but very tactically disciplined and does exactly what you need. And that's one of the most important bits in that sort of system.
And that is why Villa struggle, because the upside that Newcastle have often is generating chances through pressing. And if they can't do that, if you have a good build-up structure to get around their high press, then you take away a big chunk of their dangerous chances. The other thing is if you stop them from being able to build up from the back, which is what Villa did, you stop them from being able to generate chances in that way. And so they were basically stymied in both in and out of possession by Villa.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting, isn't it, how there's kind of like underrated skills within football, off the ball stuff being one of them. I'm just wondering what underrated traits are in human beings, friends and partners. You
compassion.
Know, compassion is a good one, isn't it?
Yeah.
Ability to fix things. Handiwork. You know, that kind of thing, underrated.
I guess making people feel nice. It's just,
being
warm, warmth, I suppose.
Warmth.
Yeah. Not in terms of actual heat.
You think warmth is underrated?
Depends how hot you can get.
People rate warmth, though, don't they? Aren't they always saying, oh, that person's warm?
Yeah, well, it's nice to be warm, isn't it?
Yeah, but it is nice, but isn't it rated?
Yeah, also, yeah, I guess.
What's underrated?
Controlling levels of evil.
I actually think the capitalist system that we live in rates that very highly indeed. Now let's move on. before we all lose our jobs. Yes. Is it time for a break or are we moving on?
Yeah, let's try a little break.
Yeah. Bring down the system! Yeah?
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
Yes, I believe in the Federal Reserve. Now, let's begin. Let's carry on and discuss more. I would actually wish the gold standard had come back because I like gold.
Did you know that they have a maple syrup standard?
Yes.
Reserve in Canada?
Yes, everyone knows that who spends time on the internet, John.
Oh.
No, I only know it because John's told me about 3 or 4 times now.
But I think the maple syrup reserve is quite interesting, isn't it?
Because, go on, tell us about it.
Well, I mean, apparently their economy is so dependent on maple syrup that they have to have a reserve of maple syrup so that they can actually modify the economy as and when.
So they can, like, print money then, really, because they can just make more syrup, therefore have more money.
But they make the money out of the syrup, so it's very sticky.
No. See, the issue is right, if your economy...
These coins are all together!
If your economy is based on the value of maple syrup, and then people start hoarding maple syrup and not selling it, the value of maple syrup goes up, and so you have a maple syrup reserve.
Yeah.
Just thousands of bottles, presumably.
To avoid
to then throw into the market. Yeah,
to
make sure that you can modify the price of the...
What is the plural roll of moose?
Mooses. I think it's just moose. It's one of those sad animals that only has the plural is the same as the single, you know?
Sheep.
Yeah.
Sheeps. Fishes is better than fish.
Fishes is better than fish. Well, anyway, you know, we can all hope to be lucky enough one day to enjoy some truly Canadian maple syrup. I've had it myself, and I find it to be a little rich. A little unnecessary.
Which is ironic because that's what their economy is based on.
Rich. Yeah. There we go.
Yeah. You can't eat gold.
Well, but you can eat Freddos.
That's true. You can eat Freddos, yeah.
You can put money into whiskey. That just raises in value all the time.
Is that what you've done?
No, I don't have enough money to invest in anything.
You've got a little investment portfolio, haven't you?
You're talking about my excellent trades that I started during the... profitable.
Now, there may or may not have been a huge cut there, but if there was, that's why I'm looking at the camera. And if there wasn't, there probably should have been. And Stephen Dunn, maybe not doing the job. Who they paid to do anyway? Oh, back from the break. Do we even that just after the break? Do we even?
You're in control. Don't shower us.
What's happening today?
It's not long to the end of the season. We can do more. This is fine.
It's really not long until the end of the season, is it?
Did you know in 2012?
Might as well get our fun.
Did you know in 2012 thieves made off with nearly 3,000 tons of maple syrup?
Thieves.
How do they hold it?
I think they stuck it in their pockets.
Wow.
That doesn't make sense. It'll fall out.
Valued at an estimated $18 million. That's £13.6 million for those people who...
Could you swim in it? Or would you get...
No, it's too viscous.
Two-thirds of the stolen syrup was later recovered.
Two-thirds?
They clearly ate the other third.
there's one other person there going, I don't know what happened to the other third. But I am feeling quite stodgy.
1,000 tons of maple syrup.
Yeah, good lord. Yeah. Wow.
What's heavier, 1,000 tons of that or 1,000 tons of steel?
Question. One that we'll find out the answer to after we discuss Arsenal 2. No, that's wrong. Well, it's correct in a way, a manner of speaking. But West Ham United 2-2 Arsenal Football Club. Now, have they gone and fucked it? That's the big, that's the main question, isn't it? That's what we're all gathered here today for. Even the Arsenal fans, they want to know the answer to that. Will I have misery or will I have joy or will actually it not make a difference in the grand scheme of my life and I'm going to die anyway and within 2 or 3 generations, probably people won't even remember my name or that I ever existed. You know, does it actually matter?
What
no, Apple,
legacy?
Keep deferring. I don't want to update my computer now. God damn it. Right, anyway, have they gone and fucked it? What do you think, JJ?
I think that Arsenal have to win all their games, which is very difficult to do.
Yes.
And what we're seeing is that when they don't have Zinchenko, it changes things enormously. When they don't have Saliba, it changes things enormously. And that's basically what you're getting. And then they've had a couple of games in a row now where they've gone 2-0 up and have then let it go. Is that a mentality issue? Or is it, I don't know, like even little things, like Kieran Tierney is a brilliant left back, and I've always rated him very highly from his days as a young player at Celtic. And he was like a captain at 19 or something like that.
Yes.
Magic. But he just doesn't really have the skill set to play inside the pitch, really.
No.
And it's simple things like the speed of pass from outside to in. If it's not like fast enough, then it gets intercepted. And you see it for, I think, one of the goals, isn't it? Or one of the chances the West Ham get where he passes it inside and it's just intercepted easily and then they push it up the other end.
Mm-hmm.
And because they're in a big, wide open shape at that point, that's bad. Rizinchenko might not have played that pass because he can see the danger, or he would have just pinged it so it went to feet.
Worth saying, Thomas Partey had a very off game as well.
He
was quite poor and was actually substituted off about 20 minutes before the end, which has been unusual so far this season in terms of his performances.
Yeah, and you can see like it's really useful at times for Gabriel Jesus to drop really deep and get himself involved in all sorts of bits of the play, so it's very hard to work out where the hell he is then stop him. But then would you rather have someone up top like Nketiah would have done if he was through the middle or something, or Trossard just playing further up? There's different arguments to it. There's no right or wrong in it. I think just something happened. Like it's one of these things with weird. It's weird about football is that when they're 2-0 up and then there's that, the first goal is a penalty, wasn't it?
It was the first one or was the second one?
It was the first
second
one was a penalty.
No, for West Ham.
For West Ham, Benrahma penalty.
And that's what
Bowen
I remember.
Scored an equaliser.
Because again, we just spent the entire fucking time on WhatsApp during this game as well.
That's
so like,
right. Yeah.
So then, that goal, and then it just changes the momentum in the players because they were just sort of standing still. West Ham players, they had no energy or intensity. And David Moyes, you see him like a couple of clips, and I'm like, what the hell are you doing at the side of the pitch? You can't get into them until halftime, whatever. But then that just changes it, and then the stadium gets a bit louder.
Worth saying as well that Arsenal went 2-0 up within 10 minutes, so it seemed at that point that it was going to be an absolute smashing.
Yes, for me, like the issue here is not about is Arsenal.
That's a word, but you just added an extra H.
Smashing. Yeah. I liked it.
Sorry,
that,
John.
Yeah. Sorry.
Oh, that's all right.
Go on.
I was just going to say the thing here with Arsenal
pick
is
up again.
That they
pick it up again.
That is the most annoying thing that you've
done. No, pick it up again.
You're going to talk.
I'm not going to talk. I promise, I swear on the life of everyone I know and love that I won't talk.
You are.
Pick it up again. No, cut this bit out and pick it up again.
I can't even remember what I was going to say. Surely the issue here is that Arsenal are giving away leads, right? So we can talk all we want about the players that they're missing out on, but they clearly are doing enough in both of the last two games to get into a situation where they're 2-0 up.
And then their first two goals were lovely as well. So it's like, from an attacking perspective, they can clearly still gel in the... Obviously, they were in transitional moments and West Ham made some mistakes to allow them to occur, but that's not where the game is lost.
Well, the question then is about control, and that's where things seem to be a little bit more shaky. And I think there's something that we talked about a lot at the beginning of the season, because there was a few games I think where, do you remember really early on, maybe was it against Southampton, where Arsenal went maybe 2-0 up and then conceded a goal. And part of the problem was that when Arsenal were trying to control the game, they were keeping the ball deeper in their own half, and they were trying to retain possession in those sorts of areas. But the problem was it allowed Southampton to step up, press them, and if they turned the ball over, then they had a really easy route to goal. And what we've seen, I think, through the course of the season is Arteta getting his team to be braver and braver and try and control games in the opposition halves in the way that City do, right? Which is, they spend the whole time possessing the ball around the edge of the opposition's box. And it's very aggressive, and you leave yourself exposed at the back. But the idea is that if you turn the ball over, there's still a huge amount of distance for a team to go to actually profit from that turnover. Whereas what I think we're seeing from Arsenal in the last couple of games is an inability to control the ball and move the opposition into their own half and keep them there, and rather actually Arsenal shrinking and going deeper and deeper and deeper in possession of the ball, and to the extent that they then can't get out of their own half, or they give the ball away and give up these turnovers.
That seems like a mindset thing to me.
Well, it's almost like they should go back to doing that the horseshoe thing where they didn't end up scoring any goals or getting chances created because no one's in the box, and then just getting control of the ball that way. And just like you saw City, I know they almost threw it away against Leicester as well by doing a similar sort of thing where they just put in loads of substitutes and the level dropped. But what City do a lot, John saying, is then they just pass it and just make the game kind of boring, but that's how you win it out. You just control it by making it dead. And then rather than trying to attack, you see a chance to attack, you just go backwards. And then it just slows everything down. You drop the noise of the crowd. Everything goes down and suddenly you've got control of the game.
Well, it's worth saying as well, I might not be a football expert, but I am a Rocket League expert, right? And I'm sure you'll find this too. Rocket League, for those unacquainted listeners, is a video game where you play as a car, but you play football. Yeah? Football, but as a car. Normally it's 2v2 or 3v3, you know. But if you're ahead in a game of Rocket League, the instinct often can be to drop back and defend your goal, because it is actually quite hard to score a goal in Rocket League, and normally goals come from significant defensive errors, right? But I've noticed over many years, late nights of sweating away furiously at my computer, my hands dripping with agony and pain playing Rocket League, that it's often better when you're ahead to stay in the opposition's half and to kind of just keep the ball coming back. You make them chase it. You starve them of their ability to progress the ball at all. And also, when the opposition team, when they're defending in their own half, every action they make feels necessary. Whereas when they're defending you in your half, they feel like they're under a lot less stress, a lot less pressure, right? There's a big psychological element to it. But I guess I'm saying,
if only there were some sort of sport that was like that.
That was like that. But
that we could do a podcast on.
The car thing is confusing if you weren't in a car. Mm.
And the lack of gravity as well. But this is interesting because I think a lot of people complain about Pep City being all about control and being boring.
Having too much
gravity.
But
this is precisely why. Arsenal, I think, play very similar football to Man City, but they play, I think, much quicker.
Yeah,
they're much more likely to be direct in their attacks
and less varying speeds. So it's mostly kind of
it's usually quite aggressive direct attacking, and you see them moving down the pitch quickly, and that's great because it allows them to score the sorts of goals that they scored at the weekend and the sorts of goals that they've scored against Liverpool the previous week. But the problem is that when your progression play is so based around direct attacking. Ball progression, I think it leads you to problems when you get into those situations where, because this is what happened in both of those games. They got to 2-0 and they're like, right, we've scored the two goals, now all we need to do is sort of sit back a little bit, and they don't continue with the same sort of possessional stuff that they were doing before. It changes the way that they're playing, and that's when the issues come in. They then concede a goal and then the panic starts setting in, and you can see that. And there's been a few situations now where you've just them shrinking, like you said before, seems like a psychological thing. It definitely is, because you get into this situation where you're like, oh shit, we keep giving up these chances when we're 2-0 up conceding. We're obviously too open. We need to get deeper. Mm. And so that's what really happened in the Liverpool game as well, is they just started. They're like, the only way we can stop them from scoring now is we're not going to be able to stop them progressing the ball. All we can do is like stop them from having easy chances.
And do you know as well, because then teams naturally do that all the time. I see this a lot with like Aberdeen in Scotland, is that in the past when they've been maybe had a lead against a big team or something like that, and then naturally they drop deeper. But managers, like having spoken to a couple of them, they haven't told their players to do this. Like, it's not the manager's decision. The players just naturally do it. And so if you're in a Premier League game, you can shout all you want, but if they hear it, that's one thing. If you can get everyone actually to activate that and start doing it.
And everyone at the same time too, because if you're a proactive player, an experienced player maybe in that situation, and you know we shouldn't be dropping this deep, if you don't stay with the team, you're leaving big, massive empty holes behind you. So even if you're trying to push up more,
and if the leaders are then like going back, like if Xhaka's going back, Odegaard's dropping back a bit, you're like, well, I better do this then.
I better go back now.
There was a really good piece in The Athletic. I think it was Alan Shearer interviewed a few coaches who are in charge of clubs that are in danger of going down, talking about the pressure of coaching sides that are going down. And Gary O'Neill, the Bournemouth coach, really interesting, because he was saying, I find match days really stressful because I just have no control on those days. You spend the whole week preparing and you get your players into a mindset where they know how they're supposed to behave on the pitch. But when it comes to the game itself, there's really not a huge amount you can do. You can change structures, you can bring on different players. But the dynamics of the game largely are just dictated by what the players do. And I think we don't think of coaching in that way, right? We think, oh, the coach tells them what to do in every moment. Like that player
like it's
thinking.
A video game. It's so frustrating, this. And then people will think like I think some people genuinely think what they shout at the players before a game and at half time, like, come on, lads, is what a manager does. And, and then they don't have control of the team, or they're a bad manager because they've not come out and done things. Like, Pep wouldn't go in the... It didn't used to at Bayern. Didn't go near the dressing room on like a match day or whatever. He would never go in. He would speak to them in the... A lot of their prep is done the day before. Like, their team talk is the day before. And then all the players just deal with themselves and get themselves revved up, and someone else would do a speech or something like that. It's not always just a manager telling them exactly what to do and control them like a computer game.
Like to do a speech, though. Excuse me. I've thought about myself doing a speech before at half-time. I don't... Well, it depends on the situation,
okay,
doesn't it?
Okay, so you're...
It's a random team. You're down in East London, in the Hackney Marshes. That's where you are.
I can't speak to people from East London. I can't do it. But they look at me and they think, who's this landed gentry? Where's he come from?
All right,
That's not me. You need to send me to... Where would I go? Where would I be best? A different country.
Okay, so it would be someone where they'd need to
Belgium.
Have English. Now let's go to like Scandinavia.
America. I feel like I'd do well in America.
America.
Yeah, I want to go to America. The United States of America.
All right, so it's a college. It's a big college game.
It's a college.
It's the varsity game. Okay. They're playing against their rivals. Game.
Fine, okay, here we go. I got it. Guys, we're halftime. It's the halftime break.
And this is you.
It's me, Joe Devine. 1-1 here at halftime. Now, if you want to see your family again, you better win the game. Because if you don't win the game, you ain't never going to see your family.
Your accent has changed incredibly.
Your family, who are from a very notorious part of the country, your family will never be seen, not by here, nor here, nor here, never by you, nor him, nor me ever again, because they will be dead, sir.
And then, again, I feel like the team is overloading us. I feel like the team's overloading us on the wings. Get you up and have?
Young man, I don't know what you're saying when you talk in that way.
But the other van, the teams are coming down on the wings and we can't beat them. How are we going to change it?
Is this what I sound like to you?
It's what Don sounds like.
You're coming it back to us from a cut.
Unclear when the cut was cut.
It might even, you know, there's a possibility that for the last 5 minutes, this podcast has only been me telling you you're coming back from a cut, because there's been a lot to cut.
Death by a thousand cuts, I believe.
Chelsea 1, John McKenzie 2, Brighton Hove Albion. Now, the interesting thing about this was that Brighton went in as favourites into this game.
And they won.
Yeah. The expectation was that they would win. They did win. Mm. They won by a colossal number of shots versus Chelsea's and shots on target.
That's how you win, isn't it?
Versus Chelsea's.
They won by one goal, but they did put up a...
They won by one goal, but it was a shellacking, let's say.
It was a smashing.
And, it was a smashing.
And, yeah, I think Brighton dominated this game start to finish. Chelsea did manage to get a long deflected shot go into the goal early on.
Yeah.
But even that didn't really stop the
train that is Brighton.
Goal. Yeah, they are able to dominate teams in their build-up, and unsurprisingly, Chelsea's out-of-possession play was not good enough to stop them from doing what they do. And I think the scoreline could have been even higher.
It could have been. Brighton's favour. Brighton's second goal... Enciso, the 19-year-old Uruguayan, I believe he's from Uruguay. What a brilliant goal that was.
Lovely goal, yeah.
Wow, yeah.
And it gives us an excuse to talk about how great Brighton's recruitment is, because...
Well, tell me about this, because, you know, the irony here being in this game, they're playing against a team that has bought a significant number of players. A kind of, you know, some would even say an embarrassing number.
I've just seen that goal for the first time right now. Holy.
Isn't it amazing? Yeah, it's an absolutely fantastic goal. Whereas Brighton, every single time they lose one of their players, who we think, well, that one's one of the next best in the world, they just get another one from somewhere. It's like they've got a little factory somewhere where they're making them themselves.
Yeah, there was a graphic that was on the BBC just breaking down the cost of their starting 11 against Chelsea, which, you know, whatever, these things are never really indicative of anything. But Brighton's starting 11 was worth 52.8 million in terms of their bought value.
Or half of one Antony.
Yeah, basically. And if you consider the fact that Adam Webster, who was playing that day, cost $20 million, which is a big chunk of that $50 million.
Yeah.
And they've used Levi Colwill for most of the season, who is on loan from Chelsea, that would bring it down to closer to $30 million.
Well, also, Estupiñán is $15 million. So if you put him and Webster together, that's over half of the rest of it.
Yeah, exactly. And then, as you're saying, like $52.8 million wouldn't buy you like most of the individuals for Chelsea, right?
No.
On the values that they've been bought and sold for. So yeah, this is, I mean, obviously Brighton enjoy certain economies of scale, let's call it, where they can bring in those players. There's risks involved, obviously, but they also are in a position where they can buy those players and not get milked for everything they're worth. But they do have this great recruitment strategy where they are able to bring in players and then send them out on loan somewhere or put them back in the team that they've been bought from for another season to aid their development, to make sure that they're at a level that they can be then brought into the team. So it's just a really nice approach to making sure that you're buying players before they're overvalued, because they are at the level that you can play them in the Premier League. You buy them before that happens. You make sure you oversee that process so that you get them to a point where they are ready to play in the Premier League. And then you bring them in having spent very little money for them. So,
yeah
like, I mean, Joel Veltman, they bought for 900,000 from, I mean, he got him from Ajax. But like, there's players like Caicedo, who they got for 4.5 mil, who they're obviously going to sell for big money. Matoma, 2.5. Evan Ferguson on a free. Alexis McAllister, 7 million. And then they sent him back to the club that he'd been playing. He played in Argentina for two seasons after that. And then
sounds like he's leaving in the summer as well, but he'll go for a big fee, right?
Yeah, so they're just really smart recruitment. They do take risks, and not all of them, the risks that they take come off, obviously, but because they're paying such low fees and then they're selling players on for big money, that's all absorbed in that cost as
well. It's amazing. So I feel like we'll look back on this this team, this period, with great admiration. Also interesting perspective here from inside the TIFO studio, because whilst you're there talking about economies of scale and smart recruitment, JJ Bull over here laughing when you said milk.
I kept going through that. I thought you did a good job.
I tried hard too, because he really was losing.
I really tried
it
not to disrupt.
What is it you were thinking about Brighton being milk?
They're milking the players.
Yeah. Okay.
I was like, maybe that's how they get
the football juice.
The new players.
Yeah, they milk players.
I was imagining the players are there being milked like a factory cow.
That's right. Well, I mean, if that was the case, then goodness gracious me, the dairy production at Chelsea, very large indeed. Because so many new players, you would have thought the pintage must be out of this world.
Pintage is a good word, isn't it?
It is a good word. Yeah. I use that.
My point really here, JJ Bull, is that Chelsea are a fucking mess, man. And, like, to be honest, Frank Lampard took over just over a week ago, three games since. I think the idea was that there'd be a bit of a new manager bounce and that the fans would be happy to see, you know, an old legend of the team back. Unfortunately for him and for the team, it's really not worked out. They've lost those three games, and it seems as though the mood is as low as it ever was. That's not great.
It was pretty nuts. Like, that, there's that Athletic article that was pointing out. I can't remember who wrote it. It's one of the multiple writers on it, I think, in a report, and how, like, all these players they've signed, they have players who have to get, like, in the dressing room at training, they don't have enough space, so they have to train in a separate little tiny room on a sofa, basically. And then you can't, like, I think we talked about this before, but if you're doing training sessions, like, you build them for how many players you've got, and normally you'd, if you want to do 11v11, like, then that's one thing you can do. But they've got so many players, they have to have 11v11 running on one pitch and a 9v9 on another, which is insane.
Yeah.
So you can't possibly get the attention for each player. I mean, it's like a class at school when you've got too many kids and the teacher can't look after them all at once and no one's going to benefit. And then you'll have loads of little, I'd imagine, that they'll be, because how do you possibly manage that, get them all together to be comrades? Maybe you get comrades. I don't know where I'm going with that one.
Take over the rest of London.
Yeah. You know, they might form like cliques, and then that's not maybe what you want to have, because you want to make sure it's a whole team, but it's impossible to balance that team together.
Well, it's undoubtedly going to be added to in the summer.
Well, they need a striker.
Christopher Nkunku is going to come. He's an extra attacking midfielder. Like, they don't need another one of those.
Yep.
They're going to find a new manager. Let's just imagine, hypothetically for a moment, that it was, you know, Julian Nagelsmann is a name that's been connected with Chelsea in the rumour mills a lot. That person's going to want to bring one or two people with them. Like, you can see the situation becoming untenable. They also have their very own deadline day, don't they? They have, as a result of various financial requirements, balancing acts, there is a day in the summer where they are required to sell a certain number of players by. So I feel like the Chelsea chaos is going to rumble on. past the end of the season.
Yeah.
We've not seen the end of it
here.
Well,
it seems like a bit of a mess. There's a thing I've been told a few times, and you can see it. Like, what you see in the pitch often reflects as what's going on in the boardroom. So if it's a bit of a mess there, that's kind of what you see. And you can see it in the structure of what their team. They're missing key players that they need. Like, the goalkeeper is kind of a weak point. You don't know what their best defensive pairing is, or if they're in a three or a two. They don't know exactly what system they want to play, how they want to play, who's going to play. So there's no identity whatsoever. And Lampard's not there permanently. That's not going very well, so that's not going to work very well. Whoever comes in will then maybe try to... Maybe, like, Luis Enrique comes in and maybe he's just able to fix it. Like, he made a team with Messi, Neymar, Suarez, sure enough, like, three of the best players in the world ever at the time, playing together. But that's a team that doesn't have very much defensive solidity behind it. Made them win a treble. Mm-hmm. They were amazing. So every chance you could turn that into it. But then they need to sign a striker. But look at the squad structure they've got. Like, Tuchel got rid of Abraham, Giroud... And another, I mean, Lukaku.
Aubameyang is
Lukaku. Aubameyang's there.
Yeah, I mean, Lukaku will come back in the summer. Is it interesting? I mean, there's.
But they could sell him for 60 million euros or something like that. And it's
theoretically. So there's a possibility that he could play. I'm not really sure.
It's all just things that
Todd Bowley also
seemed
to have a little bit of a Barney with one of the fans there. Well, a bit of a shouting match at the game over the weekend, too. Welcome to the Premier League, I suppose, isn't it?
And this is the thing, right? They've got all these players, massive contracts over a long period of time. They're nowhere near Champions League this season. Who's to say they'll be anywhere near it again next season? They easily could, right? Maybe they'll get sorted out and come back in. But if you're not in that for a sustained period of time, that's a huge amount of money to lose out on every single season. Then how do you close the gap? You look at what Arsenal had to go through to get to where they are going. The amount of money they've spent, you'd think they probably need to have a bit of revenue coming in from Champions League and European money, especially, and prize money, to be able to get to that point. And then it becomes like a circle where they might end up just being like Liverpool were in the 90s, the late 90s, where they're just stuck in that mid-table, can't get out of that.
Could be.
Maybe.
What do you think, John? Any thoughts?
That's a bit over the top, to be honest with you.
I guess what I'm interested in is how do you get out of this? Because I think people's assumption is you just bring in a new manager and it sort of works out. But I just don't think that is going to... There's clearly a lot of work that needs to be done in terms of the squad structure and build up in the summer, and it's becoming more and more obvious that you can't run a squad with just elite players in every single slot, right? And that's, I talk about Pep Guardiola with respect to this all the time. Pep Guardiola always has small squads of elite players, and what he can do is bring in players who are happy to sit on the bench whilst be good enough to actually play a chunk of games in the season.
Yeah.
Whereas the problem that Chelsea have now is that they have a squad that's good enough to have like a Conference League win in its third team. It's mad how much quality they have in the squad, and it's like football is not about that. It's not about having all of the best players. I feel as though we've moved past that era, and it feels almost as though the Bowley is trying to get the Galacticos or the end of the Abramovich era with a smart coach. But the issue isn't smart coaching. It's about smart squad build-up. It's about smart management of the players that you have. And I feel as though It all depends on how quickly they can get over this initial hurdle that they've created for themselves and move on to a situation where they're like, right, let's think about this properly. Like, let's look at the way that Man City and Arsenal are doing what they're doing.
Yeah.
How do we emulate that? It's not just by buying good players and seeing it all come out in the wash.
It's worth saying as well at this point, for the sake of balance, I suppose, that Chelsea might say the reason that they bought so many players was because that they could foresee that, you know, the 5-year contract over rule being removed, and therefore their opportunity to do that being taken away, right? So they might say, well, you know, we've tricked the system here, and we might look a bit silly now because we've got a bloated squad, but in 4 years' time we're going to have a squad which costs us less than it should.
It can easily work as well. It just looks like it's failing now because it's gone all wrong, but it could be fixed.
My mom does this thing that really annoys me, right?
Your mother?
So she goes into the supermarket and it'll be like a bag of apples reduced from £3 to £1. And so what she'll do is she'll buy three bags of apples, and then she'll bring it home and she'll be like, I've got loads of apples here which I bought cheap. This is great, isn't it? And I'm like, Mom, we're not going to eat all of these apples. Some of them are going to go off. And I feel as though that's what Todd Bowley's done. He's bought, he's gone in and he's been like, look, we've got all of these apples.
That's a great analogy.
Isn't this great? But it doesn't matter how many apples you have, because you can only have a functional amount of apples.
Now, tell me,
once you've eaten those apples and the others have gone bad,
who
cares about the
apples? Is Mrs. McKenzie buying?
She's a fan of the Granny Smith.
Granny Smith,
yeah, which I think
is a little soft for my tastes.
Soft.
I prefer a jazz apple.
When you say soft, you mean? I think of Granny Smith as being like really sharp and tart.
That's exactly what I think of it as.
Maybe I'm thinking of a different kind of apple.
It's the fastest apple.
What's the soft apple?
A soft apple is maybe like a Braeburn.
A Braeburn is a soft apple, yeah.
But they can get quite mealy, I think, you know, when they get past a date and you bite them and it's like...
You kind of feel like you could be eating a potato that's been juiced a little bit.
Yeah. It's confusing potato. That juice comes out of them because they're very dry.
Yeah.
Where's all the juice?
Inside the skin.
Jazz apples are nice, though, as are Pink Lady. They're very similar, I think, but they're quite nice and crisp, aren't they? They're really like... Mm.
And what does God say about apples?
Well, apples... Do you know, that's an interesting story, because like in the Garden of Eden, of course, that it's considered to be an apple that Eve hands to Adam to tempt him to eat the fruit.
Is it an apple?
Well, it's not ever said what fruit it is, but in the Latin, I think the word for sin is, I don't know what the words, but it's like M-A-L-O some way. It's like malo or something, means bad, right? You get mal in French.
Yeah.
But I think the word for apple is similar.
My Spanish is muy mal.
So I don't know what that Latin word for apple is. Steve will tell us in a minute, but it's a very similar etymological root. And so the assumption was it must be apple because the word sounds the same.
Oh.
Apples are evil because it sounds like sin.
I always thought it was a tangerine.
What would the most evil fruit be?
Tangerine, I think tangerine is the most evil
Dragon fruit.
Dragon fruit,
That looked quite evil.
Avocado is quite an evil fruit, isn't it?
Yeah.
Avocado.
In terms of how you have to use huge amounts of water to...
Avocado, cashews.
There's lots of ethical problems around
cobalt.
Avocados. You shouldn't eat avocados, people.
You shouldn't have an iPhone, really.
Yeah.
Pineapples look like they could be evil, but also fun.
Yeah. Coconuts. I reckon coconuts have probably killed more people than any other
fruit. That's a nut.
Is it a nut?
Yeah.
Coconut.
A legume.
A legume. That's a bean.
That's a peanut. Peanut's a legume.
Is it?
Mm. Believe so.
Oh.
You're right, though. It's like lentils. Are they legumes?
I don't know. But I think I do wish you'd bring your mother up more in conversation, because I think her analogy there, her very, very foolish supermarket shopping, is the perfect analogy for us to understand what's gone on.
Chelsea.
And I hope that you can feed back to her.
I'll tell her. I'll be like, Mom,
use Ted
I'll
Bowie
use it the other way around. Yeah, like, Mom,
and she'll go, wow, I've never thought about it that way before. Yeah. By the way, here's a delicious apple pie.
I'll be like, Mom, look, here is the Chelsea squad.
Yeah.
Does this remind you of your apples?
You'll be saying it all smugly while you're munching on delicious crumble.
That's right, yeah.
By the way, it's apples for dinner.
Apples for
apples
dinner.
Apples for every meal.
I would eat apples for dinner. Yeah.
How many is apples? No, I mean,
You can put apples into savoury dishes, can't you, with pork?
You can. What did producer Don say?
You can make good soup with
good
apples.
Apple
really?
Soup. Mm. Well, that's interesting.
That's cool. I like that.
Yeah, soup with apple before.
It's malon, by the way. Latin for apple.
So it's malo and malon, right?
So it's a melon.
Melon?
Now, malon is the Latin word for apple, and malo is the Latin word for evil or sin.
Which word is melon for?
I don't know what melon means in Latin.
Should we have? Did we ever have a second break?
No.
Oh, God.
Shit. Well, I'll tell you, now we've learned about fruit. Let us have a break and think more about fruit during the break.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
DirecTV gives you access to apps like Netflix and live sports right next to each other.
I don't get it.
Let me put it in pigeon terms. It's like that one amazing dumpster with the old fruit and cardboard all in one place.
How am I supposed to keep up with illustrative metaphors when you are making me so hungry?
Get live TV and streaming apps together without a satellite. Visit DirecTV.com. Requires high-speed internet-connected Gemini device and separate paid subscription to watch Netflix on DirecTV. Terms and restrictions apply.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Ooh, kumquat.
Yeah.
Grape.
Have you ever eaten kumquat?
Yes.
What is it? I have literally no idea what it is. I just
Google
know
it. Now,
how do you spell it?
Where is it stored?
Next up, we're back here to talk about the Champions League quarterfinals.
Yeah, it's like a really small orange.
But yeah, it is a tiny little orange, and it comes in leaves. A bit of a review, I should say, and a look back. Got a sneeze? No, the sneeze is gone.
Do you look into the light? You know, only some people do that.
There's a light there.
That's not everyone can do that, apparently. I thought it was just normal.
Not everyone can look into a light.
No, when they sneeze, because if I look into a light, then I can sneeze. If I need to sneeze.
But that's I just look up.
If I look into the light, I can sneeze.
Well, the first leg of Champions League fixtures happened last week. Fantastic. This episode being released on a Tuesday, of course. So there's a game this evening if you're listening on day of release. There's a game tomorrow. All sorts of different games at different times. Manchester City, big old shellacking on Bayern Munich. 3-0 from the first leg. It could be overturned. Seems unlikely that it will be. Real Madrid, of course, also, I believe, won 2-0 in the first leg against Chelsea. Seems less likely that one's going to be overturned. But again, anything can happen. Let's chat about those two first before we go on to talk about the games involving
the
Italian
teams. Can I give
you
an interesting
fact? Please do. Does it involve your mother?
No.
Okay, go ahead.
Sorry.
Yeah.
But I think almost all of the teams apart from Real Madrid and Man City dropped points in their weekend fixtures. Mm. A lot of the teams actually changed their lineups quite stringently. So Man City went whatever it was it 3-up or 4-up? And then changed everything around.
A lot of big teams losing at the weekend. What's Tottenham's excuse? They weren't in the they didn't have any other games, did they? They're just shit. Please go on though.
But yeah, so there's clearly a lot of teams are considering the second leg of their game to be more important than their league form, perhaps.
Well, indeed, it probably is.
Yeah, it probably is. So it will be fascinating to see what impact that has on the games.
Yeah, okay. Manchester City, perhaps maybe not the biggest surprise. They're clearly the strongest team left in the tournament. 3-0, I think, is a surprise.
Yes, I think, especially given that the game took quite a turn after the 60th minute for me, and I think largely due to out of possession stuff that changed, which I think we'll do a video on later in the week. But that changed the course of the game in a way that I think a lot of people were like, well, you know, Bayern weren't actually that bad, and then there was just a couple of defensive errors that led to them losing by a considerable margin. But again, I think that those errors were prompted by the way that Man City changed their pressing. So yeah, Man City go into this with essentially not a huge amount to do other than make sure they don't concede three goals, which I think makes your life a little bit easier. Although, as we've talked about with Arsenal, right, sometimes if you think too defensively, it can impact the way that you control games. But Pep Guardiola, this is not his first rodeo, so I'm sure he'll be fine.
He's been to many a rodeo before, as have all the Real Madrid players, JJ. Currently 2-0 up against Chelsea. To go back to Spain, where was that first game? Where did the first game take place? Was that
It was in the Bernabeu.
So the Real Madrid players coming to London for the Tuesday night game this evening. It's unlikely that it will be overturned, don't you think? Based on kind of current form, Chelsea's current form,
I can't see it.
Joe, sorry to interrupt, JJ. Joe, the Real Madrid game is Wednesday.
Oh, okay.
Ignore me. I'm looking at the first leg.
Let's keep all of that in, please, so that we can see what I have to deal with here at the TIFO Football Podcast. Here I am, making sure I do my own research, my own work, knowing things in my very own head, Steve. And there you are, getting confused on a computer, looking at a computer, and it confuses your little brain, doesn't it?
I just want to say you're doing a great job.
Thank you. Thanks, Steve. Carry on. Yeah, you're doing a mediocre job.
Yeah, I agree.
And we'll have your performance through a review immediately after this episode. But please carry on, JJ.
Real Madrid, I don't think they even really had to try that hard in the first leg. You had Ancelotti doing like keepy-ups on the sideline when the ball went out of play.
Yeah.
Which is not obviously... That doesn't mean that's how good they were.
Sure.
But there's just something about that you maybe wouldn't try if you were if it was a nil-nil tense, you're probably not doing a few keepy-ups to get the crowd going.
Yeah.
I think a lot of players had a really bad game. Like, it's a lot of it structural. In the first leg, Lampard set them up to just try and hit over the top. So the new Real Madrid would push up, and they put Felix and Sterling up top to try and get them in behind. And they get a couple of balls in behind that they almost managed to get something out of. And it would have been one of those... You know, people say that it's a tactical masterclass because they've managed to beat them by doing by blocking everything down in their own half.
By being shit, yeah.
Yeah, and then hitting them on the counter. But I like Real Altis kept complete control of it. And I mean, the difference in quality between Modric, Kroos and Valverde and any midfield that exists currently is massive.
Well, now, I'm interested in that because it seems at the moment that the most likely outcome for semi-final is Real Madrid, Manchester City.
Yes.
That feels like an exciting game. A rehash of last time out, too. What would be your instincts? I mean, for God forbid you speak too soon, John, but do speak.
Well, I don't see why it would be much different from what happened last time, right? Which will be Man City largely controlling the game for long periods and then Real Madrid doing what they do in short bursts and causing problems in that way. I suspect that maybe Madrid have dropped off a little from last season, so maybe not they're not quite so good.
They're definitely weaker defensively. Like the back line, I think, isn't strong.
But it's the age-old debate, right, isn't it? It's like the debate between like really structured teams and more, I guess, I don't want to say anything that's insulting because I think it's a good way of...
You don't want to say vibes.
I don't want to say vibes. But
you want to say moments teams?
Yeah, they are moments teams and they are teams who rely on the quality of their players. They get those players into situations where they're all around each other and the ball and you allow them to solve problems. I think that's the best way of thinking about it is that when you have Pep Guardiola as a coach, he has solutions to problems in every phase of play that are developed structurally. So he'll tell you how you can do things to get around the opposition's problems. Whereas when you have a team like Real Madrid, you rely on the players themselves to come up with the solutions that the opposition are posing to them by using their elite talent and you know making the difference when it happens. I think personally that you know in the long run the more structured approach is probably the more functional, but that doesn't necessarily mean that you can't win, as we've seen evidenced by the fact that Real Madrid have such an impressive history.
I agree
with
that. It's almost because they've got just these exact group of players that they're probably underrated, this Real Madrid team, somehow, because they think of what they've achieved. They've dominated Europe for ages with that core of like Kroos, Modric, Casemiro was there before, and a lot of players, well, some players were there at the very start. You had Carvajal, I think, was the very start of that kind of run, and they've carried it on all the way through. But like they can only play in that way because they have people like Modric, who is he's like Messi level almost of like he's been amazing. You forget how good he is when you watch him.
And they also never believe that they're down and out in fixtures, right? The last Champions League run was simply Real seeming like they were in and just completely out of it, and then having two or three moments where they turn it around and the momentum shifts. Right.
I mean, I think I have to say though that the difference between the obvious difference between this season and last season is Erling Haaland, who himself is a moments player. If his moment was just ongoing and constant, and he could score at any moment and you know completely change the game, right?
Yeah, and I think a lot of people have been making that argument that the reason why City brought in Haaland is for these knockout games where you just need someone who you can get the ball to in certain situations. But I still am yet to see Man City play with Haaland and sort of get to desperation levels where they're just yeeting it into the box to see what he can do. So
well, often that's because of the game state. They've already scored three goals and they don't need to do that.
Of
right?
course. Yeah.
Okay, fine. Well, the other side of the draw, Benfica 0-2 Inter from last week, which was perhaps a bit of a shame for JJ Bull. You're a big fan of Benfica there, but they couldn't quite cut it in that
game. I like
this
Benfica team, and I've watched a bit of them, so fine. That is a shame. But you never know.
You never know. It was in Portugal, so they will go to Milan to play Inter.
Wasn't it Inter played Porto, didn't they? And they really had to hang on a little bit. I think they'd done the same thing where they'd gone up in the away leg and came back home, and then really had to hang on at the end to make sure that they didn't concede. So
well, there's nothing
anything
to lose
can happen
for Benfica. Anything can happen in the UEFA Champions League. Now the other game, Milan 1. Nil Napoli, bit of a repeat, John, of the not too distant recent league fixture as well. You sort of think, I believe, Milan-Napoli, not a terrible matchup for Milan, despite how good Napoli have been this season.
I think it's worth saying that like, a lot of times when we go into assess how a game will unfold, we usually just go on form and sort of relative league position when we think about how teams are going to play. So you see Napoli top of the league and you think, well, they're obviously going to be better than Milan. But
you, John, what you do is you look again and then you find the thing that's going to upset the most people when you say
No, but again, the Villa-Newcastle game is a good example of that, whereas a lot of people would have thought Newcastle were the favourites in that game, but there are tactical reasons why Villa could have caused problems and did. And I think the same is true with a Napoli-Milan fixture. Yeah. I think, obviously, Napoli were missing Victor Osimhen, which isn't great. He's obviously an important part of their goal scoring, but I think he's also really important for them out of possession.
Yeah.
In a statement that will surprise no one, but I think Milan are an outlier team in Serie A, really, or at least at the top level of Serie A, because they're really good out of possession and they're really aggressive out of possession. And teams who are good at build up can often get destabilized by teams who are like that. They also really, really good at playing in transitional moments as well. And they have Teo Hernandez and Rafael Leao, two of the most exciting transitional players in the world. And so what they can do so well is they can stop teams from getting the upper hand in terms of the possession, destabilize and win the ball back, and then release their players. And I think Rafael Leao in particular is a real big game player, like really turns it on in these sorts of fixtures. So we've seen them already knock out Spurs as well, having been 1-0 up and then going back and defending that. So I think it may not be the most attractive game of football ever. I suspect that they'll be really locked onto not conceding rather than going out and scoring. But yeah, I think it could go either way. If Osimhen comes in and has a couple of moments, that could be it. But
sure.
I think it will be one of the most interesting fixtures actually, just in terms of this is the one which probably could go either way the most.
Is this the one you'll be watching?
What day is it on?
I believe it's on the same day as Madrid-Chelsea. I think it's tonight.
Yeah, I'll probably watch that.
Just winking at Steve, waiting for him to interrupt me there.
Yes.
Oh, there he goes. He's interrupted me to say I'm correct.
Yes, well done,
to
Joe.
Authenticate.
You're really smashing it today.
Thank you.
I believe in you.
Thank you.
See, that's the positive that might have worked in your team talk.
Yeah.
Right. Oh, yeah. That team talk that may or may not have been cut from the whole podcast.
It surely made it in, didn't it?
It might have done.
Some of my favourite bits.
It was about 25 minutes long.
It was really long. We did more on that than we did on any other team.
Well, that's because we know what side of the bread our toast is buttered. Is that right? Anyway, that game happening in Naples as well. So very exciting for everyone involved. And that bit was cut for, again, reasons that I can't possibly explain to you. That's probably the fifth time that's happened.
This episode is
now stop talking, because remember when you talked last time, we had to cut it out. Do you remember what you said? That stuff that we had to cut out? That's right. Good boy. There he goes. Trot along now, my little podcast piggy. Now, what's
Clever way
left
to place blame on someone else there. I like that.
It's good,
isn't it? It wasn't John. It was me. Now, that's I think that's the end of the podcast, isn't it?
I'm exhausted now.
Is that the end? Well, we've really put so all of our creative juice into
I can't remember the last time I was not in this room.
No, that's true. We did a lot of milking today, and we really paid off.
Ate a lot of apples. Did a lot of team
drank balls. A lot of milk. Did a lot of team talks.
Found out about kumquats.
Is that it? Is that it, Steve?
Oh, please God, yes.
Okay, well, listen. We'll be back, hopefully, with an exciting announcement next week. Hope so.
When a lot of this podcast may make sense.
waiting for something to be signed. Oh. And then I'll discuss. But, wait. Now, that's the end of the podcast. We'll be back next week with more from John McKenzie.
Yeesh!
I laughed so much last week when you woofed, by the way. Can you woof again for me?
Woof!
Something about how he doesn't fit the pitch of his woofs. And it is JJ Bull the Bullet.
Yeesh.
Yes, indeed. Steve Hankey there, podcast producer. Thank you, Steve.
No worries.
And, of course, Don as well, who we heard from for the first time, I believe, today.
That made the cut.
Well, he's in charge of the cut. I'm sure it'll make the cut. Ego glutton as he is, old Don. That's what we call him. Fine. We'll be back next week with more. But until then, goodbye.
Bienvenue.
And
Auf Wiedersehen.
Thank you.
Athletic.